Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the Vicar Law Podcast. I am your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law. Today we are continuing our September theme of enduring powers of attorney with a conversation about common issues that I see with enduring powers of attorney in my practice. And I'm going to do it from the principal side, but also from the attorney side. So if you're wondering, what the hell are you talking about, Lydia? Pop back to last week's episode where I talked about an enduring power of attorney and what it is. And today I'm going to talk about the common issues. So when you are a principal and you're doing, so that's the person that has the enduring power of attorney, you're in your enduring power of attorney, you're the principal. When you are thinking about your enduring powers of attorney, there are a couple of common issues that arise that you need to think about. So the first one is for financial decisions, when should the power kick in? Like when should the attorneys take over? I think it's a much more traditional view that to appoint someone immediately with immediate power. And I had this, I wouldn't say it was a disagreement. I had this differing view amongst my estate planning group called the TT Precedence Club, which has, I think now a couple of hundred people part of it. All estate planning lawyers really focus on estate planning. And a lot of them do immediate enduring powers of attorney, meaning the power is immediate. And the argument for that is really there are some circumstances where people might have early onset dementia or might not be diagnosed, might not have lost capacity fully, but are doing some really unusual things. So some of the stories were kind of around spending money or gifting money to charities unnecessarily, making some crazy purchases, which I get. My view is that the enduring power of attorney for financial matters should kick in when you are deemed incapacitated by a medical practitioner. My view is that if you are slightly using it and you want to go buy a Ferrari, you buy that Ferrari, okay? That's always my opinion with my clients. And I've sort of become a bit of a civil libertarian in doing this job, whereas I think that people should maintain their decision making and be able to make their decisions for as long as they are able to. So that's the first thing you have to decide. I will caveat that by saying that if you are elderly, and so what will happen quite often is that an older person will come to me and they have one child or multiple children that are already doing a lot of the finances for them, so doing all the online banking, paying their bills, and it makes sense in that circumstance to have an immediate power because their attorneys are already doing that. Another circumstance where I might do immediate power is for someone that is terminally ill. Quite often they just decide that they're done. You know, they don't want to deal with it anymore. They want someone else to take over the decision making. And so that's another circumstance where I might do an immediate power. But otherwise, that's my preference. I had a client that I was speaking to who was also a solicitor. I was talking to this person about this. And what they said was, and just by way of backstory, they had recently become the attorney for one of their parents. And what they said was they liked that power in my enduring power of attorney because it removed any suggestion that they were inappropriately taking over the finances of that parent. And that I think is particularly important when you might be in conflict with siblings in that circumstance. So they were really grateful for that clause and that it was worded that way. They felt like it gave them the appropriate authority. They felt like they weren't stepping in too early, that they were coming in at the appropriate time, and they were very comfortable with that. So that was one way to think about it, and I thought was really great feedback. So that's one thing you have to decide. Obviously, you then have to decide, you know, who are your attorneys? That's a common issue people come to me with. Who should I appoint? If you don't have a spouse and you don't have children, this is a really hard one for people. Who do you appoint? There are solicitors out there and there are services out there that will agree to an appointment as an attorney. And I do have a contact in that regard that will do that for the right person. But I find that it is really hard. And I will say not long ago, I had an attorney contact me because they were an attorney for their very elderly friend. They were also quite elderly and this person didn't have a lot of family around, and they did communicate to me the burden of being the attorney in those circumstances where they were quite elderly and they'd wished that the person had really thought more about it. You know, this person struggled a little bit with online banking and keeping up with bills, but also didn't want to let their friend down. So you also have to think of that aspect, and you also have to think about that aspect in terms of your ability to change your enduring power of attorney, so revoke it and do a new one when you're getting older. So in that circumstance, the principal had lost capacity. I think there were multiple letters from doctors saying that they didn't have testamentary capacity. And so the attorney was in a really tough situation of having to be a little bit stuck, really, unless that they were going to apply to QCAT to have someone else step in, which was, an option for them. So thinking about who is going to be your attorney when you don't have someone close, I will say most people that have a spouse and children, that's who they pick as their attorneys. And I think that is very suitable. But just like when you're deciding appropriate executors under your will, you should really think about an appropriate attorney, because as I say to people, you're alive, you know, like the will, you're dead, you know, it kind of is like you're gone. If things go down, you're not there. But for this one, you're alive and it really could affect your life. So really important that you think about that. The other thing principals need to think about as well is their circumstances and whether there needs to be any additional clauses put in there about conflict of interest. So a really common one is where an attorney might be a child of the principal and they live in the principal's home and the principal pays all the bills and the rent. And so putting a clause in there that the attorney is allowed to use the principal's funds for payment, for paying, you know, for the house, kind of like maintenance for that person. So that's a consideration, considering whether there may be any situations where your attorney, there might be a suggestion of conflict of interest, and seeing if we can allow for that in the special terms of the enduring power of attorney. So that's another thing to think about as a principal. I don't think people think about that before they come to me and we have the discussion about the circumstances. No way. I don't think it's a real thought. I think people think, oh, you can't do the wrong thing as an attorney. Absolutely. But they don't then apply that to their chosen attorneys in their circumstance. So that is a great conversation to have with a lawyer and a really a reason why you shouldn't just print off the form online, that you should be seeking the advice of a lawyer. Now, from the attorney side, so we'll just like flip it now, and some common issues I see with attorneys. One is not wanting to do it. That's a really big one, particularly as people get older. I feel like people don't have the capacity themselves, not necessarily the mental capacity, but I think the endurance almost of taking on that role. And so you can refuse to act. That is open to you and it's always open to you. It becomes a bit more complicated, like in the situation that I said prior with that older lady. It becomes a little bit more complicated when there's not an alternate attorney appointed. And that really means that you're going to QCAT seeking the appointment of another person. So hopefully finding somebody else that could take it, maybe a close family member or a close friend or another family member that can take it over. But just making sure that there's that continuity of care, and you don't want the public trustee to be appointed as the administrator if you can avoid it, just because of the fees that are involved with that. Another issue I see with attorneys quite often is the conflict between what they think are the best interests of the principal and what the principal thinks. So I will often have adult children come to me that are the attorneys for their parent. Their parent has lost capacity that has been, you know, certified, but, you know, that has been established. And they have very clear views about their health and their financial situation, particularly about leaving a home to go into a nursing home. And those wishes being in conflict on what the attorneys feel are the best interests for that person. And that is a really, really hard situation to be in. What I say to people is really it's up to you. You should definitely take into consideration the wishes of the principal. But at the end of the day, if they can't stay in their home because it is dangerous, then it is in their best interest to move. So it's really a balancing act of what to do. I actually attended the Queensland Law Society Succession and Elder Law Conference recently, and His Honour Bernard Porter, KC, spoke about five ways he thinks that substitute decision making should be done in his experience, not only as a substitute decision maker, but as, you know, a judge that presides over these kind of situations. And I do want to do a podcast on what he said to give people some ideas because it was really interesting. And at the end of the day, it's kind of multifaceted. You really have to look at a lot of things. But at the end of the day, the principal has entrusted you with this role for a reason and hopefully trusts the decisions you're doing. If you're questioning the decisions you're making, whether they're in the best interest, in my view, you are acting in the best interest because you are being self-reflective. You're thinking about what is right, what is wrong. You're listening to the principal. And that, I think, is a great way to be as an attorney. So I hope that has given you a bit of a flavor talking about the common issues, things that I see day to day with enduring powers of attorney. If you were in a situation where you're a principal and you'd like your enduring power of attorney to be changed, or you're an attorney and you're really struggling with the role and need some advice, you can hop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar, and we can get it sorted together. So next week, we are going to talk about advanced health directives, which I think kind of falls under this enduring power of attorney, well, you know, umbrella. I couldn't do a whole month on advanced health directives, but I can do a week on it. And I think it's interesting about how it interacts with enduring powers of attorney. So thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And I will speak to you next week. Have a great week. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, visit www.vicarlaw.com.au to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.